you? Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today. I'm officially panicked about the Bruins. It's official. I was dipping my toe in the water after like the first three games of the season.
The first game of the season.
First one game of the season. I was halfway there. I'm there now. Full alarms, full sirens, full panic, full everything. That was the Philadelphia Flyers last night. They're awful. They're not a good team. They got a couple of good players here and there scattered throughout their roster. They do not have a good goalie. That guy shut you out last night, has been getting absolutely lit up this season. And Korpisalo, I can't believe it, actually deserved better than what he got out there. Didn't see a lot of shots. So it's not like he was great, but Sam Ersson, this kid over the Flyers, has, I think, a save percentage lower than Korpisalo's. So, you know, there it is. This was the type of game, getting shut out at home against the Philadelphia Flyers, that makes things, conversations like we were having after the first couple days, first couple of games, it justifies those conversations, I think. I don't feel, and I didn't really at the time either, because it was two bad losses against the Florida Panthers team that you tried so hard to build a roster to go against. But now you're losing to the Flyers. Now you're getting shut out by the Flyers. I don't know what to make of this, but this is bad. This is a bad, bad start. This is not the type of start that you generally think, okay, well, they'll turn it around. They're the Bruins. I don't know what to make of this. I've seen them get off to good starts and flame out at the end of the season. We've been seeing that for about 20 years. Let's be honest here. Maybe not that long, but certainly a long time. This is a team that runs out of gas at the end of seasons. It's been going on for a while. They had an older core. We had all the different windows for Bergeron and Krejci and, you know, Chara and all these different guys, you know, these old guys at the end of their careers, and you'd see them at the end of their careers, at the end of these seasons, completely wiped, completely out of gas. I don't remember the last time they got off to a start like this. I don't remember the last time that they looked this inept to start the season. At the very least, no matter what happened the year before, whatever happened in the offseason, whoever retired, whoever got traded, whoever got signed, whatever it was, you'd see a pretty watchable product, if not an elite product, in the last few years anyway. Mm-hmm. An elite product to start the year. They were ready to go. Montgomery had them ready to go. This year, I don't know what I'm looking at. This year, I don't know how this thing is. If not for the fourth line, this team might have one or two wins this year. I mean, really, like that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a team being carried by its fourth line. And that's the part of the team that's not making a lot of money. So I think it's time to turn the microscope over to Jim Montgomery. It's time to turn it over to Don Sweeney. It's time to turn it over to everybody. I think right now is the time. We're 10 games in here. There's 82 games in the season. Now's the time where you have to decide, is this the group that we're going forward with? Is this something that's gonna make it? Are we going to make it with this group? What happened here, and why isn't it working? These things have to be figured out quick.
And it's definitely dissimilar to Montgomery's previous seasons here in Boston, because they were fast starts, right?
Yeah.
And then you can just kind of cruise. And then when you go through lulls, you got kind of the cachet to fall back on from the fast start. Now, no contract, no winning, and you're right. So I open up my Athletic app this morning, and the Fluto Shinzawa story headline, so far Montgomery has no answers for Bruins stumbles. And that's the reality. This is going to come down on him. Fair or not?
No.
Because I think there's other, you know, issues with this team, certainly scoring and their best players playing like they're their best players,
right,
and things of that nature. But we talked about this on opening night down at Scores. Great place.
That is what it's called.
We talked about it there.
That's what I said most of the show.
That if there was any stumbling,
yes,
the contract was going to be an issue. It's in all of sports. It's whether it's a player that needs a contract and he, oh, am I going to be traded? Am I going to be a free agent? And he's scuffling.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a normal slump. It's going to be attributed to the contract and the business and the black cloud hanging over him. And that's where we're going here with the Bruins. It's going to start to really, I think, increase the heat on the seat of Jim Montgomery. And I don't know if that's fair or not. Like, some, you know, is Brad Marchand, A, thinking about his contract, B, thinking about Jim Montgomery's contract, or C, is he aging? Right? Like, isn't that the most likely and realistic scenario?
Absolutely. I mean, it could be all of the above, but I think for sure, you started to see it last year. It wasn't a super productive season for him last year, and now he's barely another surgery. How many surgeries has he had? You know, this is a guy, an undersized guy, who's been a great Bruin, and they'll go down as one of the all-timers for sure. But this is an alarming start to the year for him. And really for Pasternak, I would say, too, guys like Zaka, guys like Geeky, guys like Coyle, guys like Frederick, you know, like these are all people we were expecting to take that next step. And they either are plateaued or regressing right in front of our eyes.
And they're not talent rich enough to have all of these people play below expectations.
Right.
Like, you needed at least some constants and probably, as you said, some projected growth from some guys. And you're not getting any of that. And they are bad right now. They're a bad hockey team. And I do think they're starting to press. And I know Montgomery has started to talk about that. Guys are kind of thinking instead of playing. And then by thinking, it's actually adding to the ineffective play. It's adding to the sloppiness. I've told you on defense, I feel like they're always thinking.
Yeah.
I feel like when I watch them play D, they are well, what is that guy? Oh, he already did it. Now what? Oh, he already did that too. You know what I mean? It's like, just go play. And maybe they're not good enough. They also may be an overrated hockey team at this point. Just because you spend a lot of money on Lindholm doesn't mean you're going to get your money's worth out of Lindholm.
Right?
He might not be that guy, which could be unfortunate moving forward because you gave him a lot of money for a while.
Right. Neither one of the Lindholms are really setting the world on fire.
So you got a couple newcomers that aren't living up to your hopes. You got some returning players not living up to your hopes. You got a coach that maybe isn't pushing the right buttons, right? Like there was when was he pissed off last night and he like covered his mouth, like he covered himself in his papers? Like he's frustrated.
Yeah.
And frustration trickles down. The players are frustrated. So now you just have this whole room of frustration. And I don't want to.
I can tell you when I was frustrated.
The whole
game? They had the wide open net and were piling on and going for it right there. They could not bury it. And then, 30 seconds later, here comes Forster back the other way on a nothing play that ended up being the only goal of the game, really, until the end there. That was frustrating. I found that extremely frustrating. The 5-on-3 I found extremely frustrating. There was a lot of this game.
Oh, yeah, that's frustrating.
That it's just you're watching it and you're going, come on, at some point here, these things. And I know some of it's bad bounces. That happens sometimes. There were a couple of those last night. But that's not an excuse to get shut out at home by Joel Farabee and these Philadelphia Flyers. Like, come on. You're making this kid's Ersons out there. He's not good. He's their starter last year, had a terrible season, and you made him look like Ron Hextall. I mean, this is unacceptable. This is unacceptable play here from a team that should know better, that has veteran leadership, that has goal scorers, that has, I thought, this revamped decor that was going to be able to protect whoever the goalie was, whether it's Swayman, whether they go with Korpisalo or Brandon Bussey, whoever it is. Not going to matter, right? This D group is fine. They're gonna be out there protecting whoever the goalie is. You don't have to pay Jeremy Swayman. Listen, Jeremy Swayman hasn't been great either, so I'm not going to go down that road. But this whole thing is a bit of a train wreck. I mean, it's looking like for Bruins standards anyway, as regular seasons go, this is very bad.
And you're in last place. That's the other thing. And the gap is growing. Like, other teams are establishing themselves, setting it. We talked a little bit about it. Florida settled in after a slower start, other than, you know, taking care of
other
business
than
twice
your
against
ass,
you. But you start digging a hole that now you're chasing. And if this team isn't dealing well with pressure of individual performances, how are they going to deal with the pressure of collective games lost and starting to create? And the slow thing, you know, is starting to become a thing. We talked about it earlier. Well, you get bigger. Did you get slower? Well, no, you just look slow. I think Razor kind of pushed back on that when we were at Scores, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know if they're any slower.
They were having circle skated around.
They look
night.
Slower.
They do.
I mean, I can find some of those NHL, like where they monitor them, like the sports science things, and you can prove to me they're not slower. They look slower. And Brad Marchand's an interesting guy because I've always had this theory with those types of players that are kind of surprise elite players.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Tyreek Hill, you can lose a step. You know why? Because you started out 4 steps ahead of the guy.
Right.
Now you're only 3. But if you're one of those guys that truly gets everything out of his ability and you start to regress, I think the regression can be fast and it can be off a cliff, right? Like you worked your ass off to be better than everybody else. You didn't have a lot of extra rope to play with. And I just wonder if he's a guy like that. I don't know. Certainly not sure I want to give him a 3-year extension if that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, this has been a problem with this coaching staff and this group and sort of everything else. You saw it when Cassidy was here. You're seeing it start to happen now with Montgomery, and I think that Montgomery's probably not going to go on to his next stop and win a cup like Cassidy did. But that was eye-opening, was it not? I mean, seeing him go somewhere else to a team that it got off to a good start as an organization, obviously, with the Golden Knights. But to go there and to win like that and then kind of, you know, parade the thing up and down Cape Cod like he did, like that was I remember thinking from that, you know, I'm not sure the coach is the issue here. I'm not sure the coach has ever really been the issue. But all the way back to Claude Julien, who won the cup. Like this is a team that I think has some fundamental issues that they try and have been trying all this time to work around and buttress with other things. And when it comes to a season like this with a bad start like this, now it's like the Emperor really has no clothes. Because all the other times you could say, hey, you know what? They might have got bounced in the first round or the second round or whatever it was last year. But look at this great start they're off to. Anything can happen this year. You get sold a bill of goods as a Bruins fan these days. You know, we're selling you hope. We're selling you the hope that they're going to carry it over in the next season and come back with a vengeance. And then this year, the puck to bounce their way, and they'll be going all the way back to the Stanley Cup. Like, that's the hope that you keep buying into. And it keeps working because they hook you in the regular season.
Sure.
You know, they hook you in the regular season, and they drag you to the playoffs, and then, bam, it's over, and the whole thing starts up again. This is now threatening to throw that whole ecosystem into an uproar.
Well, yeah, they're certainly not hooking anybody right now. Is
not
anybody
at all.
Hooked on watching? I was watching last night. I wouldn't say I was overly entertained for much of that hockey game.
That was a brutal game to watch. And by the way, the play I was talking about was when Drysdale blocked a shot, and he was down in front of the net, Pasternak shooting. Everybody's shooting. The Ersson's not letting anything happen. He makes three saves in front of the net, and then a minute later, they come down the other way, and Forster scores the only goal. And I was just, I don't know if that's the time when Monty was screaming. That's the time when I was screaming.
Yeah.
I was screaming in my room, in my living room, like, what the hell is going on here? What is wrong with this team? What is happening here? This is the Philadelphia Flyers, guys. And, I don't know. I mean, this is... It could just be a phase this season. They could start to get hot. I'll believe it when I see it, because right now I see a team that's really going through it here.
Well, I do think they're pressing, and I don't think they've gotten luck at times over the last couple weeks. Like, there's been opportunities, like point-blank range, and you're like, oh, you got to bury that, and they don't bury it.
Right.
And I think that's part of it. But I think more of it is they're not a good hockey team right now. I keep going back to, what are they good at? And you keep going back to fourth line. Well, a team built around its fourth line, not much of a team.
Right.
Right? Like, that's just not how it's supposed to work. That's a complementary aspect of the team.
And they weren't built around their fourth line. Like,
no,
their fourth line just happens to be the one that's...
Their success is built around
the fourth line kind of got slapped together, you know?
Right.
Like, that's usually what a fourth line is.
So, I don't... Like, what do you feel like the answer is? Like, what is the... How do you shake it up? Because... You're laying a foundation of futility right now, early in the season. The opposite of what you've done in recent years. And they're going to start questioning themselves more, not less. And I don't know I think if we asked Razor, don't you think he, based on what he told us opening night, one of his answers would be like, give him the extension.
Yeah.
Like,
and he's tried mixing things up. Like, Kostelec was up on the second line. Koepke was on the third. I think Frederick got dropped down. Bergeau got dropped down. Poitras was out there getting beat up last night. Like,
yes,
you know, you saw some other things happen out there. It's not like he's just sitting and standing pat and waiting for something to happen. He's trying to be proactive about it. But I think you're seeing a lack of, I don't know, talent? Lack of talent with this forward group? I mean,
That's what
it looks like. Yeah.
I mean, if they're going through a phase, a slump, whatever, maybe. But this team feels like the exact opposite of the team they share the building with. One team feels like it's hitting its stride and taking off. And the other team feels like, uh-oh, we already peaked and now we're fading.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're not even going to be hot in the regular season. We're not even going to be hot to start the year anymore. And maybe I'm being overdramatic, but I will say, all the people that said you were being overdramatic after one game...
Apologize.
It's less overdramatic the longer we go into the season. Because guess what? Fluto is questioning it. Jim Montgomery is questioning it. They don't have answers right now for the way they're playing.
No, they do not. And I don't know where you're going to come up with them. I don't know where that's going to happen. I know they've won a couple of games against some bad teams this year. They've now lost games to bad teams. So whatever happens here going forward is kind of a mystery. I don't know what to expect from this team on a day-to-day basis. I don't think Montgomery knows what to expect. I don't think these players know what to expect. They're kind of just flying blind right now. And that's rare.
I don't rule out, like, your guy Swayman gets hot. And Pasta gets hot. And
all of a,
you know what I mean? Like, they have guys.
And Pasta's often not a bad start. He's got six goals already. He's on pace for like 50, but still. I mean,
right.
50 goals and 15 assists, I think, is what his projections are right now. And, so no one's really making it happen.
And Marchand could get hot.
Yeah,
I'm less optimistic of that being a thing and him really having some great stretch of games. But there are guys on this team that you can talk yourself into. If they get hot, they can carry us. And I would start with the goaltender. If the goaltender could carry you through a stretch, and maybe he's the guy that needs to, maybe we need to, you know, get him to the point where we stop saying he hasn't been the biggest problem.
Right.
No. Be the reason you win, and then maybe that's the impetus for a little positive snowball of momentum. Because right now, I just think they epitomize kind of scuffling. I think they're scuffling through everything they do. Offense, defense, goaltending, coaching. I think they're all kind of just scuffling around as a club right now.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Montgomery, after the game, was grilled about this, and here's what he had to say.
I don't know. It just, we're not making plays. We're not doing enough to generate high danger scoring chances. Whether that's a will to go to those areas or, you know, not the right game plan, you know, we're all culpable for not coming out with a victory tonight.
I don't like the sound of that. That's a guy who's got his back against the wall. Doesn't it sound like well, maybe they're not willing to go to those spots. Oh, well, who's not willing to go to those spots, Monty?
He's frustrated.
A little soft, huh? They don't want to go down there, get their hands dirty. That's interesting. Who are you talking about? What do you mean? I mean, he's not calling anybody out by name, but I think that's probably next. You know, that's the next step of this as his seat gets hotter. And listen,
as he walks out of town,
this is still going on by Thanksgiving. I'm not sure he's still going to be here, honestly. And I don't know if that's 100% fair. You're right. I mean, you gotta put some of this on the players. But this is not working. And when it's not working, change happens. And they're not going to fire the whole team.
Especially when you have a guy who only has months left on his contract,
right.
Not even years. You make it easy. You create the narrative. It's part of why nobody wants lame duck coaches. Nobody wants to be the lame duck coach. No teams generally want lame duck coaches because unless you start like they've started the last couple of years and just put the story to bed with your play on the ice, it opens the door for these kind of questions. But I thought right there, all you needed was like the first 3 seconds. Yeah, I don't know. Like that told the whole story. And soft is a team, you know. When coaches are on the hot seat, apparently teams become softer. That seems like what we're dealing with the last couple of weeks with the Patriots and the Bruins. And that's what Gerard Mayo was doing. If you remember, Gerard Mayo in London answered like 5 questions with, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, who should I ask?
Really inspires a lot of confidence.
I don't know. It just,
geez, you know, what do you want from me? Huh? Give me a break. Well, you kid dupes, you know, give me a break.
We're not quite to Ron Renicki saying, I don't know, who'd you want me to pitch?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like not asking specific questions, but we're going down that road.
We're getting there, unfortunately, and that's with the status of the Bruins right now. Not good. Not a good situation there. A much better situation with your Boston Celtics, as you mentioned. That team undefeated, hitting the road for Indiana tonight to take on the Pacers. We'll talk about that with Brian Scalabrine, who joins us at 4 o'clock. Also, Gerard Mayo spoke today, gave an update on Drake May, who is still in the concussion protocol. We'll get into that whole conversation as well. But first, Celtics and Pacers tonight. The Pacers team, this is a team that it's on your radar. You had them as one of the potential scary teams against the Celtics.
I did, and I think they generally play the Celtics pretty tough, and Halliburton, they're off to a 1-3 start, I believe.
Yeah.
They have not gotten off to a good start, but you're going on the road to face them in their barn, as they like to say.
They've lost to the Knicks, Sixers, and Magic, who are all pretty good, but the Celtics, I think,
shake
all of their asses.
And also, if I expect the Pacers to be in the conversation to challenge the Celtics, well, then I expect you to be a decent basketball team. I can't,
right.
bad matchup when I keep losing. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, I think the line was 7.5 Celtics. This is one that won't surprise me if, like, in the third quarter, you're in a little bit of a dogfight. I don't think they'll lose. Because we've talked about it, I'm not sure if I think they're gonna lose, but I'm not sure I'm gonna be thinking they're gonna lose too many times, even if it's on the road against a team that I think does challenge them at times.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what's coming on tonight around here locally. Anyway, some good sports nights going on as we have the World Series continuing as well. We'll get to that as the story. Not really so much the Yankees winning, but the Yankee fans being just the most Yankee fan you can possibly be. Tremendous performance there by those guys who will never see the inside of a Major League ballpark ever again, I don't think. And, of course, there's the New England Patriots who now coming up on a matchup with the Tennessee Titans are being considered buyers. Where would they have gotten that idea? Where would Jacina Anderson possibly have gotten that idea?
Thanks for listening.
If not for Spin Zone. I mean, listen, this was, and the whole point of Spin Zone is that we take, you know, a truth and we spin it around and, and send it the other way. And the truth here was the Patriots are a bad team. What do bad teams do at the trade deadline? They sell pieces off, right? Spin it around. Andy spun it around. I'm not going to take credit for this. This was Andy's thing. And now everybody's jumping on board the Patriots' buyer's train. That's got to feel good. And that's got to feel good to have a take land like that.
Also feels good. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for listening, Josina. Or maybe Elliot Wolf. Maybe he was the one who was listening.
Right.
And then he made some calls and she caught wind and blah, blah, blah. I don't care how it works if this is actually happening. Now, some of the people that were retweeting her reports and were being a little greedy, I think, like a lot of T. Higgins photos. That's my dream. I love the idea. I'm not sure how realistic that is, but you can shoot a little lower and still make your football team a better football team.
Yeah, Elliot. And that's probably what they have to be doing, I think. This is not going to be your normal trade deadline, but it is going to be something I think, and I hope that the Patriots are active in. So we'll get to all of that here with your phone call. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, Gerard Mayo. An update on Drake May, still in the protocol. Will he play? Andy thinks so. I'm not sure. And what happened to protecting the quarterback? But first, here's Stiz with what's trending. Yes, Jacoby is a professional quarterback who plays football in the National Football League for the New England Patriots. Therefore, we feel very comfortable putting him into a football game.
I was worried they were going to have to bring in like a high school quarterback, some amateur.
Would have been tough. Joe Milton could get the call. We'd find that weird caller who keeps calling in, pleasuring himself to the idea of Joe Milton playing.
One play away?
He'd finally get, you know.
Just he was like, one play away last week.
It's like the Speaker of the House, basically.
Right?
What's going on here, absolutely.
I mean, with this line and with the way Jacoby holds onto the ball at times, you're saying there's a chance.
You might see it. You might see it happen. Anyways, you think that Drake May is going to play this week, and you're basing this off of clues that may or may not have been dropped by one Mike Reese.
Yeah, I think Mike Reese, if you read his tweets and sort of the things, the optimistic slant he's been putting on things, using a Brock Purdy comparison where Brock Purdy was in protocol and was able to get out on the field. And then you piece that together with the way Mayo was talking about May, that he wanted to go back in, that he seems fine, that he's going to be on the practice field today. The limit is 30 minutes, I guess. But also, did you hear Jacoby Brissett? How does that change your practice? And he said, well, I guess I have to wait 30 minutes to practice. So that means Drake May's the starter today. On Wednesday at Gillette Stadium, the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots is Drake May, right? Did I misinterpret that?
That went right over my head, honestly.
So they asked, Gerard Mayo says 30 minutes, and then they asked Brissett, how does Drake May practicing for 30 minutes change your day? And his response, if I heard it correctly, and I'll go back and listen, I think the transcript may even be out.
Okay.
Was,
let me see if I can find it.
I guess I have to wait 30 minutes to practice. Like, I took that as he's taking the starting reps until he's, you know, until they, nope, you're out. You can't do these anymore.
Interesting.
And that's how I took that. So I think all signs point to, barring a setback or something unforeseen, I am happy to believe that he may play on Sunday.
All right, I'm looking at the transcript right now. It says there are some takeaways of the Tennessee defense, game ball on Sunday, been in the league for 9 years. Gerard Mayo told us that Drake will be limited in practice today and won't practice for longer than 30 minutes. How does that change your practice approach, regimen, or anything? I guess I've got to wait 30 minutes until start practicing. That's about it. Other than that, it doesn't change anything. Now,
did I misinterpret?
I don't think so. However,
okay,
if someone is in the concussion protocol and they can only practice for 30 minutes, do they just get that out of the way first and then put them and then take them off the field? Does that necessarily mean they're the starter?
No. Because if you're the head coach and you're planning on starting Jacoby Brissett, he's taking everything he needs to take. He's getting ready as the starter.
Yeah.
This makes
unless
it
they
sound
haven't
like
decided yet. Unless they're putting him out there to see if he can do it.
I think I think they've decided. Gerard even said something about, I hope we'll have some clarity on that later in the week.
Mm-hmm.
But I took that to mean, just like on Sunday, I waited till Drake went down to go in the game. Today, when Drake's done, I'll go into the practice. I think Drake May is the starting quarterback on the practice field today and until the NFL says you can't start on Sunday.
Should he be the starter this week?
Why not?
Because he has a concussion?
Whatever. Guys have concussions. Did you not hear me say Brock Purdy had a concussion and that he played? And
right.
Guess what? He lived. He survived. He's still playing.
Brock Purdy's not 22. It's not his rookie year. It's not a guy that you've sunk your entire future of the franchise into. And it did seem like going, at least to start the year, that they wanted to protect him. They were all about protecting him from certain things. This is a nothing nowhere season. You're in the protocol for a week. You're going to rush him back out there and this first time in the concussion
protocol. You just did what you do.
What?
You led the witness. You slanted it. You're going to rush him back out there? No. If he's cleared, he's cleared.
It's not often that guys are brought back in 1 week. I mean, it just doesn't happen that
well,
much.
Well,
I hate to go down this road because I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about brains. I'm not a concussion expert by any means. But it seems like it was mild, correct? He kept playing. Even Gerard today was like, he threw a couple dimes even after he took the hit. He wanted to keep playing. They spotted it from afar. I don't think this was a, oh my God, he was knocked the F out. And he was like, eyes were rolling back in his head, or he was bawling his eyes out like Luke Kuechly or any of these things. And if
he was slow to get up. All right. I mean,
sure.
In the game, like, he was down and he took him a while to get up and he was a little woozy. I mean,
was Josh Allen, and he missed like a play.
Right.
Right?
Josh Allen, I thought, was knocked out on the ground in that one play.
I thought so, too. I thought that was worse than this.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So
two wrongs don't make a right, is my point.
But there's no wrong in it if the NFL says he's cleared. Like, who am I to say
the NFL
is
the one that had to tell the team that he was even concussed in the first place?
Right, because it wasn't obvious. Guys get up slow all the time.
Yeah.
Guys get up slow all the time, and unless somebody said, unless they tap out themselves, we had one of those earlier this year where somebody, I think, self-diagnosed. I'm drawing a blank now.
On the Patriots?
Yes. And it happens. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. If you think you're concussed, get the hell off the field, right? Like, get out of there. You said it. Yeah, I don't know if you told that story on air or off air. One of your concussions, you were driving and you realized, oh, shoot.
Yeah, right.
This doesn't feel quite right.
While I was on my way to do a radio show. As a matter
right.
of fact.
Yeah. So,
you know what was funny about that is no listener, no coworker, nobody could tell that I had a concussion. And I did the whole show and I thought, what does this mean?
How did you get it?
I got rear-ended. I was sitting at a stoplight. This guy in a Buick comes up, rear-ends me. I hit my head on the headrest.
Wow.
And they gave me a rental car, and I'm driving it up to New Hampshire. I had a show in New Hampshire. And as I was driving, I had the radio on, and I realized, like, I couldn't hear it. I was like, I have a concussion. This is not good.
The radio was on and you couldn't hear it?
I mean, I could, but, like, I didn't notice it, you know? Like, I can't really explain it, but...
Wow.
Yeah, it was sort of like that. Like, it was on and there was someone talking, but, like, it wasn't... I realized, like, I wasn't processing any of it.
You didn't, like, maybe pull over and call somebody and say, hey, I don't know if I should...
No, I went to work, I did the show, and then afterwards I went to the hospital, and they did that thing where they're
now
like...
Now he calls out with the sniffles.
They're like, hey, you know, they're, like, snapping and stuff and, like, shining the flashlight. They're like, hey, how about this? What do you think of this? And I was like,
nothing.
And they were like, yeah, you definitely had a concussion. Like, what'd you do today? And I was like, did a radio show? And they're like, no one noticed. I was like, I guess not. I guess no one noticed.
It does hurt a little bit, huh?
It's a little, yeah, basically the same. It's like when Gronk gets a concussion, no one really knows because you can't tell. Like, what's Gronk with a concussion even?
True.
How's it any different, I guess?
But I don't believe they'd be rushing him.
Yeah.
I believe they'd be, and they have made it quite clear. Gerard has done this multiple times. NFL, 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 protocol. Like, we're going to do what they tell us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And... therefore, I don't think you, oh, they said he's clear, but we're going to keep him out a couple extra weeks. Also, and I don't know.
I'm not saying I could keep him out extra weeks, but this week maybe I would. Yeah.
Right, so that's extra. If the NFL says he's cleared to play, then he's cleared to play.
Well, then he hasn't even sat a week, though.
Wait. There's no rule that you have to sit a week.
I understand.
There's a rule that you have to pass protocol.
That's true. And
he's halfway through.
Fine, but I feel like there's a lot of problems with it. And I think the protocol in general is something that has still a work in progress, right? Would we agree with that at least? I mean, you have these spotters who don't really do anything. The league had to call down to even initiate the thing in the first place. You know, they'll put somebody back on the field. I don't know. I mean, I think that if you're the Patriots and you're trying to be overly cautious, or maybe they're not trying to be overly cautious. I thought they were being overly cautious with Drake May. I thought that was the whole idea. And in this case, with a head injury, I didn't have a problem with it. I had a problem with not wanting to play him to start the year because it's like, come on, get him out there. But now that there's something that may actually be problematic for him and his, you know, in his future or whatever, like, yeah, I'd be okay with him being extra careful there.
But where is the line? Like, where is the line with extra
you
careful,
wasteful? You draw it. I mean, you're the team. You draw it somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. See, to me, that's arbitrary.
Yeah.
If I have doctors, neuroscientists, whatever, who've come up with this, I actually think the biggest issue
these
with...
same neuroscientists are all saying, yeah, hey, Tua Tagovailoa, go out there and play. So it's like, you know, everybody kind of agrees you probably shouldn't play football anymore. And he's rushing him right back out. Not rushing him, but they're sending him right back out there. I know. I caught myself that time. But they're sending him right back out there. Right? I mean, they'll always do that.
But where is the line? That's what, and I think the biggest issue in all of these is the player. Honesty from the player.
Yep.
Do you have a headache? Do your eyes feel different? And I think many times players aren't 100% honest. Now, players would push back with, I've had a headache after practice every day of my life or something, right? Like,
right.
Have you ever seen
Peyton
Manning?
Doesn't really help their argument all that much, I don't think.
But like the Peyton Manning forehead?
Right.
You tell me that pressure doesn't, like, give you a little bit of a headache sometimes?
I get a headache looking at Peyton Manning's forehead.
Right. And that's where there's this weirdness here. But as a player, if you feel fine. Because, you know, that's the one. So I took a questionable side on the MRI thing where I wondered if he asked for the MRI.
Yep.
Like the doctors didn't necessarily need it, but he said, I want it, blah, blah, blah. That would be where I would say, if he doesn't feel comfortable, if he feels like it's rushing, if the NFL clears him and the Patriots want him to play, now you could go down a road where you're Jimmy Garoppolo and you're kind of labeled, but he should be extra careful. Drake May, if you have the slightest headache, if you're listening to the radio driving home and can't hear it, don't play on Sunday. But if you feel fine, and he might have felt fine on Sunday, right? Like he might have not passed whatever test they wanted, but he might have felt pretty good because Gerard, I believe, said he wanted to go back in at halftime.
He did say that,
yes. So he wanted to go back in. He felt fine. If he feels fine and the NFL clears him, then you get his butt on the field, you go out there, and as much as I may not want it, you go beat the Tennessee Titans and you have a two-game winning streak.
Agreed, and I'd like to see that too. But him wanting to go back in at halftime doesn't necessarily mean he was okay to go back
and
in
look
at halftime.
And look at Amendola and Edelman were speaking openly a few months ago about how they would purposely try to help each other beat the concussion protocol.
Right. I've dealt with this with my own son.
Players want to play.
They want to play. They fib a little bit. They do certain things. And sometimes you really need to almost, like,
right, which is why the team needs to take it out of their hands sometimes. And I just
and the league
know,
takes it out of the team's hands because you can't trust teams because the Buffalo Bills are giving smelling salts to their quarterback to wake him up to get him back in the game.
Right, I
want to
try those.
Why?
Because it's like I've seen it, everyone on the internet doing it, and now I just want to experience it.
Everyone on the internet's doing smelling salts. I don't think that's a safe.
Well,
like,
I saw it on Rogan. I saw it on Rogan. To be honest,
now is it true smelling salts or is it ammonia tablets?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Steven Gostkowski used to do it before every kickoff. You know, go back and watch the
classic. It he was like, you up like nothing else,
which I never understood. Like, you're the kicker. I don't, what do you need to be all hyped up for?
Intern Mike just said he does it before every period.
Oh, I don't. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think. Now, I think it can like do minor damage to your nasal passages. I think it can like burn a little bit.
I mean, I try to look at it as like if I'm getting teary eyed, I'm doing it right before going and playing a period. So like that's what I tell my teammates.
This is the mentality we're
players gonna play.
Right, exactly. And I love it. I'm not making fun of you. We've all been there that have played physical sports.
Step down from like Lawrence Taylor, but not a big one.
But but for Drake May, if you feel weird, you have a 200. I keep going back. The quarter of $1 billion is on your horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more so in the next four years when you finally get there. Don't do something dumb in your rookie year, which actually some people think actually hurts the team as well because you might accidentally win a game against the Titans, hurt draft picks even more. But if Drake May feels fine and he's celebrating happy anniversary to him and his high school sweetheart, middle school sweetheart girlfriend, she should also have a say in this. She probably knows him better than anybody.
Mm.
Hopefully he's honest with her. If your head doesn't hurt and the NFL says you can play, then get your ass out there and play.
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree with that. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we come back, the New York Yankees are still alive, but two of their fans won't be able to watch those games up close anymore. A wild moment in the World Series. We'll get to that next. What a moment. What a moment in the World Series last night. It's Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons. Gleyber Torres with a shot down the line. Mookie Betts runs over, makes the catch. And then two of the biggest jagaloons you've ever seen in your life, these two Yankee fans. One guy grabs Mookie's glove, and the other guy kind of grabs his hand. And then, and I tweeted this, it was the same tweet went out by a couple other people, including a big company, right after mine, interestingly enough. But it looked like when your dog eats something it's not supposed to eat and you're trying to open the dog's mouth and get the brownie out or get the cookie or whatever it is that the dog ate. It was a stunning moment. As the ball did actually pop out, Mookie ran over to the umpires. He said, I caught it. And then they went over and talked to the guys in the stands. And not the guy. So the guy, there's two guys here. There's two culprits. There was the main guy who was prying the glove open. And then there was his friend who, when the umpires came over, was like, this is this line. He crossed the line. Blah, 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 blah. Going on and on and on about he came over the line. And once you go over the line, as if that's some excuse, right? Like, as if, once you go over the line, we can just rip your glove open and take the ball away. Like, just an amazing sense of right and wrong there from Yankee fans. Typical Yankee fans, by the way. About as typical as you possibly can get. But the Yankees ended up winning that game, and they have extended the series a little bit. And by the way, I'm not here to say that those guys are good guys or anything, or that they're beauts, or that Rob Gronkowski thinks they're cool, even though all of that has been said about them in the last 12 hours here. But it was a funny moment. Like, I don't know how you can't watch that and think that wasn't funny. That was pretty funny.
It is funny. I immediately look at it, though, like, if I'm a Dodgers fan, you could have broken his wrist or something. Like, you're prying. That was not.
And if he did, it wouldn't have been funny.
That was not typical interference where you're going to make the catch and you're, like, over him, whatever. You were trying to pry the ball out of his hand, out of his glove. Like, he had already made the catch. And to what end? You know my famous question. What'd you think was going to happen? Like, what did you think? You saw him catch
the
ball.
Like, the umpire was going to be like, oh, well, sorry, Mookie.
Yeah, because those two guys pried it out, you don't get the catch. Like, what did you think was going to? Because if you regular interfere, you might steal a play for your team.
If it was a bang-bang thing, right. Like if you happened to knock into him and the ball popped out. If you're sitting there for a couple seconds trying
prying
to
prying it out, two guys trying to tag team him to pry it out. It was like, you know, you had your example of the dog. It also reminded me of like a tag team match where somebody got like the iron knuckles or whatever.
Right.
And like the other guys were trying to pry it out before he could punch him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you think how was this going to work out in any way other than you getting kicked out of your seats and never being able to go back to your seats?
No.
Because that was the only end game. Or worse.
No way out, yeah.
Because if you hurt Mookie, now you're getting arrested for like assault. Mm-hmm. Now you're probably getting sued by Mookie because he's missing time in the World Series.
They could still arrest him for assault. If Mookie wants to press charges for that, he could.
But my guess is he won't.
He
broke his wrist,
definitely.
He might be more inclined to pursue something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just super dumb. And you're right. I'm not going to glorify it like Gronk kind of was for like pretty much an extended soundbite.
Yeah.
Of like laughing.
He's
how
like,
awesome
way to
it
go,
was.
Man. Really cool. Like, you really seized the moment. It's like, not really. Like,
no. Try to stay out of the action, my friend.
Right.
Like, if it comes in, those are the ones I excuse. You're in your stands. It's a high pop-up or mm-hmm. something. And you're just focused on the ball like the fielder is. You're reaching up. Okay, whatever. Totally different. Have you seen this before?
No, never.
Pry out of his glove.
I've never, ever seen that. I've never seen a guy have his glove that close to a fan with the thing closed in the first place that the fan could then even attempt to do that. Like,
right.
That's, but when do you ever see that? Yeah.
And it's just so stupid on the part of the fan. He might be a nice guy. I don't know. Nice people do dumb things. This was a really dumb thing to do.
It was pretty dumb. I can't help but wonder how this would have gone down if the right fielder was not Mookie Betts, but rather, I don't know, Gary Sheffield at the height of the steroid era or something like that, because this guy's pretty lucky that Mookie Betts is a chill dude, you know? Like, if that was somebody else.
Jaron Duran.
In a different era, even, or maybe not. Yeah, Jaron Duran in this era.
I think he's kind of feisty.
You know?
I think that might have played different.
Imagine that was Trot Nixon that ran over there, and then all of a sudden that happened. Remember what happened to, what was the guy? Tanyan Sturt?
Yeah.
Remember Nixon wailing on Tanyan Sturt? You try that with the wrong guy in the corner outfield. And he won't get in trouble either, by the way. If Mookie Betts turned around and socked that guy, nothing would have happened to Mookie Betts.
Right. Meta world peace?
Yeah.
Different sport, but I mean, if you had gotten the right guy.
Remember when that guy spilled a beer on Sheffield at Fenway?
Yes.
And Sheffield decked the guy. And then all of a sudden, there were like three people in between him, like really quickly. That was a triumph of ballpark security, I thought, that whole thing with Sheffield back in the day. I forget what year that even was, but yeah, the guy ran over, or he ran into the corner. He bumped into the guy, beer spills all over him, and Sheffield just says, forget the play, and he goes right after the guy. And listen, if that was Sheffield running in the corner, that Yankee fan, he wouldn't have been waking up in his seats. He'd be waking up in the hospital somewhere, I'd imagine.
Well, this is one of my questions. I actually wanted to bring it up, but we never got to it last week when the Celtics played and there were the two beer spillages on the floor and all that. Like, maybe there needs to be a little bit of more of a line, especially in the NBA, where you're literally, I mean, when guys inbound, you have to move your legs so you're not touching them.
Right.
I never understood why they have to be there. Other sports, like football, it's pretty separated.
Yeah.
Baseball, there's kind of a gray area.
You're
it's separated
pretty much on
in
the
some
bench,
places.
You know? So
yeah.
You're closer than
But
some
now
they've
put
the
up
bench.
The netting, so that's kind of added a layer of separation. But really, the fans shouldn't be involved in the game.
No.
You're there to watch a game.
I was trying to think of another, in any baseball game, forget the World Series, but any baseball game, something that was funnier than that guy trying to pry the ball out. And the only thing I could think of was when, I forget who hit it, but Canseco's running back to catch a fly ball and it hits him in the head and goes over the fence.
Yeah.
That was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in a baseball game. This may have passed that. This may have passed that. And I know, again, I don't glorify it. It was funny. I'm sorry. Those guys are jerks, and they deserve never to be able to go to a baseball game ever again, and I think that's an appropriate punishment, and I don't think they're good guys and whatever, but I do think that was funny. It was just a funny thing. That picture of the guy with the look on his face going after the glove. I mean, I'm sorry.
Like, what do you think?
It made me laugh.
If he had gotten the ball out, was he going to turn?
He did get the ball out.
No, but I mean, in his possession.
Right.
Would he have, like, turn and run, like, up the stands or something?
I don't necessarily think it was about getting the ball for himself. It was about trying
not to, letting him catch it. You're in my house.
Exactly.
This
right.
My
yeah.
house.
Trying to keep the ball in play. Now it's a hit instead of an out or a foul ball or whatever. Yeah, it'd be a foul ball instead.
It's not. He's in the stands and it's in his glove, you boob.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the dumber things I've ever seen.
I know.
Because this was a...
Are you denying that it was funny?
Oh, no, it was very funny.
It was funny, right?
But the stupidity makes it even more funny. Because there's things I see that
Yankee fans are just a special breed. They really are.
I see things sometimes that work out weirdly, poorly, whatever, but I understand sort of the quote-unquote logic behind it.
Right.
What you think was going to happen there. I don't know what his logic was behind
I think he
this.
Just got caught up in the moment.
That's exactly,
that
yeah.
It.
I don't think he was thinking anything.
They
he
both
got caught up
did?
In the moment.
Because his buddy's
probably
involved.
A few brewskis
What,
deep.
Do they share a brain?
Probably, yeah.
Well, I think they're they Yankee think similar, all which Yankee is fans, why they're friends.
All Yankee fans kind of share a brain, if we're being honest here. They're all kind of the same guy, aren't they? Let's go to the phone, 617-779-7937. Brandon's in Rhode Island. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, guys. I'm calling from URI. I actually sports broadcasting class assignment on the first show.
Well, you need to get a better phone because we can't hear you.
Your phone's breaking up. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
URI is, you sounded like he was a broadcasting student. That's all very nice, but we can't understand you because
your phone's
trying
to take our jobs? Like
let's hold on. Let me see if I can bring him back on. Oh, nope, he hung up. Never mind. Anyway, sorry, Brandon. Try back later in a place with better cell reception. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we come back, Patriots have a winnable game this weekend against the Tennessee Titans. They've had a few winnable games this week for such a tough schedule everyone advertised this season as. We'll get into that. And who would you rather be right now, the Patriots or the Titans? We'll ask that question next.